Next question. To what degree do contemporary artists value tradition, and how much is deliberately breaking away from it?
I guess I have in some part answered this question already, but I could just expound on it further if I can pull my thoughts together. Okay, I'm going to speak for myself. I have a very strange relationship with tradition in that I was brought up in, you know, in like the intellectual climate in which I was brought up and which I live in now is in very intensely post-colonial. So like I have an inbuilt suspicion of a lot of the forms that literary forms, but theatrical forms as well that I've inherited and that I see, you know, at work in the history of literature and the history of theatre, the former of which I know much better than the latter. So as a contemporary artist, I guess, my own relationship with it is kind of difficult. There are aspects of it I don't value. I don't like monoliths, and I don't like dictums, and I don't like the idea that you know, a play should look a certain way, for example. So for example, when I was in Australia on this playwriting workshop, right, there was this workshop on dramaturgy that we were made to go through, and so we were taught what, you know, dramaturgy is, what group dramaturgy is. And like I was sitting there listening with my friend Faith, who is also a playwright, and the both of us like kind of reacted a bit negatively to it, because the kind of dramaturgy they were teaching was very traditional, and they're Australians, so they have a very strange, like almost caught in between America and England way of of mediating culture. So they have a, not all of them lah, a lot of, I mean, so okay, basically what I'm saying is that we were taught, like, you know, good dramaturgy is the three-act structure. It is the well-made play. It is the story of a character and his goal, right, his overarching goal, and how he, the tactics he or she uses or misuses or abuses in getting that goal and the conflict that arises. So it's very much that kind of like conflict-driven theatre, which is great, you know. But I also think that forms and methods and strategies are culturally specific in that they evolve from, they evolve from cultures, and they evolve from artists struggling with questions of that culture and struggling with questions of how best to tell stories given, you know, linguistic, cultural, political codes. And so I do believe that while it's valuable to understand these things, right, we need to be careful in adapting these forms to telling Singapore stories. And as a contemporary Singaporean playwright, I do feel that there are different kinds of structures and forms and storytelling ideologies, if you will, that may actually be more well-suited for telling Singapore stories. And I always use Iloilo as an example because, I don't even know if I'm answering your question, but like I always use Iloilo as an example in this regard, because the wonderful thing about Iloilo is that a lot of people who have very specific tastes about what makes good drama because of the film and television that they watch, right? They look at Iloilo and they go, oh, I didn't really feel Iloilo because, you know, I felt that there was no narrative drive. It was kind of like anticlimactic. There was no climax to begin with. It's not very driven. And the ending, there was no resolution. And I mean, in these criticisms, you can already hear the kind of like influence of three-act drama, well-made, conflict-driven drama, not just theatre, but drama, and film is an offshoot of drama, right? So but I love Iloilo so much because of its narrative restraint. It's almost vignette-like naturalism. It's kind of democratic characterization where everyone is screwed up. You know, everyone is beautiful, everyone is lovable, but, you know, flawed. Also, I just really enjoy its restraint, lah, basically. And the way it captured, the ways in which we speak and do not speak, and the way we hide things to get things done, right? There was a critic who used the term, like, Singaporean ineloquence, right, to describe the way communication happens in that film, and I just found that incredibly truthful, that there is a kind of ineloquence to the way Singaporeans speak, which is not saying that it's a bad thing, but that we communicate in other other ways, like, you know, there are other kind of gestural ways in which Singaporeans make meaning, and it's not in the big proclamative, demonstrative way that people in the West have typically done. Like, you're not going to have a Singaporean running up a flight of stairs screaming "Stella, Stella!" You know, so with this kind of texture and the way we negotiate life, right? You surely there has to be a different way in which our stories can be told, and so I do want to find these strategies and put them in my own writing, and I do react with suspicion to, you know, certain kinds of forms. On the other hand, I do think that the opposite end of this is the kind of theatre making that rejects convention completely. It's essentially throwing the baby out with the bathtub, where they throw out things like meaning, you know, easily, like access. They throw out things like access points. They throw out things like character. They throw out things like text, you know, and they reify it to the level of the abstract, the gestural, the non-verbal. And I think, you know, I'm suspicious of that as well, because like I said earlier, I do feel that that has a certain kind of early 20th century European provenance, and it's equally culpable in a kind of cultural hegemony that we are struggling against, right? And I think that we have to be a little bit more moderate. And I hate myself for saying it, but I think we need to be a little bit more moderate in finding new ways of doing things. And sometimes I think, right, like doing the unexpected and doing the seemingly regressive might actually be the most radical and change and progressive, in fact, thing one can do.